Nebraska Court of Appeals is now in session. May all who come here be heard. May truth and justice be served by what we do here.
Thank you. Please be seated. Welcome to the Tuesday, October 11th, 2022 morning session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. I'm Rico Bishop, and I'm pleased to be joined by Chief Judge Mike Pirtle to my right and Judge David Arterburn to my left. This morning we have four cases scheduled. As I call your case, you can approach the tables. As you come up to the podium, I will be calling your case name a second time because we are being live streamed. So for purposes of recording, I'll be repeating the case name. And along those lines, please keep that in mind if you have any sensitive topics or whatever. Keep in mind names, maybe just use first names or initials when appropriate. So, all right, with that, we'll go ahead and start with State versus Wheeler. Again, State versus Wheeler. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Timothy Norlinger on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Wheeler. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The appeal in this case is around several issues. I intend to focus my oral argument on two of them, sufficiency of the evidence and ineffective assistance of counsel. I think those are the most viable claims made on appeal. In order to assess the sufficiency of the evidence argument, I think it's important to discuss the facts of this case. Mr. Wheeler was charged and went to trial for three charges in his information. First degree assault, use of a weapon to commit a felony, and possession of a weapon by a, or possession of a firearm by a prohibited person. He was acquitted of the first two, the assault and use of a weapon to commit a felony. The allegation was it was a firearm in that case, and he was convicted of the possession of it. The operative facts in this case center around the alleged victim, Brandon Wagner. He testified that he and the appellant were engaged in narcotics sales together while Mr. Wagner was on parole. Mr. Wagner, who also goes by Tank, was on parole at the time. It appears in his testimony that there was a financial disagreement that occurred between himself and the appellant, Mr. Wheeler. As a result of that, Mr. Wagner then goes to the trailer of another individual, Christian Hespin, which is located on Bloom Flame Road. It's a trailer park here in Lincoln, and sometime on December 6, 2020. Importantly, Mr. Wagner testified that he and the appellant had been texting each other throughout the course of the day as part of this agreement. That part is important because, as is alleged in the ineffective assistance of counsel, appellant's trial counsel, who was different from me, had access to a list of text messaging and phone records. When Mr. Wagner testified about the fact that he had been engaged in an ongoing disagreement with the appellant, he stated that there were numerous text messages, numerous phone calls. However, when the phone records were reviewed, it appears that there is only one text between the appellant and Mr. Wagner on the date in question.
Why is that so critical, given that there's two witnesses who testified that Wheeler shot Wagner?
Yeah, that's true. There is another witness, that's Mr. Hespin. Mm-hmm. However, as the court is aware, likely referring to my brief and the Bill of Exceptions, Mr. Hespin also provided inconsistent statements. He provided an initial statement indicating he didn't have any knowledge of what happened to law enforcement. Then, as the court's likely aware, at his trial testimony, he changed that to say that he observed the appellant shoot at Mr. Wagner, which caused injuries to his back and his chest. The important thing there is that Mr. Hespin is changing his testimony. Furthermore, as is noted in my brief, there is some forensic evidence that doesn't appear to match either Mr. Hespin or Mr. Wagner's version of events. Essentially, Wagner and Hespin both testify that Wagner got out of the vehicle, walked into the trailer, at which point the appellant had a firearm. Wagner then retreated down the steps of the trailer, at which point Wagner and Hespin state that he was shot in the back. Wagner turns around to have a further physical confrontation while the appellant is holding a gun and is shot apparently at close range.
And throws a flashlight right at your client.
Correct. However, if you look...
And your client's blood is at the scene.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Okay.
And it's in the barrel of the gun.
It is. But that's interesting because the testimony of Hespin and Wagner make it factually difficult to understand why there would be blood in the barrel of the gun. Obviously, the facts are clear that there is blood at the scene. It's linked to the appellant and not to Mr. Wagner. Additionally, the appellant has what is characterized as an injury to his head. There is an argument to be made that he was struck with the flashlight, not the gun, how the blood got there. The interesting thing is, especially when you look at the forensic testimony, if you'll recall, Officer Dirks, who's the first officer that arrives, finds the flashlight and blood leading to and away from the scene and blood in the trailer. Additionally, the DNA in the barrel and the four casings found are not in a place that is consistent with the testimony of Wagner and Hespin as relayed by the law enforcement that was the forensic.
Mr. Norlinger, do a lot of these issues, though, really go more to the to what acquitted your client of counts one and two as opposed to count three, which is something different?
It is. However, the operative facts that are testified to by Mr. Hespin and Mr. Wagner are that my client possessed the firearm throughout the course of this incident and then provided it to Mr. Hespin, at which point Mr. Hespin and Mr. Wagner leave, and Wagner ends up at the hospital with another individual. There is significant question when you look at the entirety of the record as to how a jury could acquit the appellant of the first two counts, given that Hespin and Wagner are the ones indicating that he possessed the gun, he fired the gun, but also then find that he possessed it. And I realize that the standard of review in this case is that it has to be reviewed in the light most favorable to any rational trial or fact to find any essential elements. However, it seems to the appellant that the verdict in this case is incongruous because it appears that, to your point, Judge Arterburn, that the facts that would have acquitted Mr. Wheeler of counts one and two, the assault and the use, are the very same facts that the jury relied upon to convict him of count three, possession of the firearm. In that vein, on the ineffective assistance of
the jury could have found that he possessed the firearm but didn't necessarily commit the assault. I mean, they could have reached that conclusion, right?
That's true. I don't know what facts they would have relied upon to do so because really it's Hespin and Wagner that are saying he's possessing it and that immediately upon him, Mr. Wheeler having it, he then points it at Mr. Wagner, shoots him in the back, fights with him further, and then shoots him in the chest or the stomach area, however it's characterized.
Can I have you jump to one of your ineffective
sure.
assistance of counsel claims? So you claim that trial counsel was ineffective for failing to call / subpoena Allen, Carmen, and Greer,
correct.
Right? And is that sufficient to just name the parties or the witnesses that you claim trial counsel should have called, or under the more recent Nebraska Supreme Court cases, do you need to elaborate more on how their testimony, what about their testimony may have been helpful
yes.
to the case?
I can see that the recent jurisprudence on ineffective would indicate that you would need to allege how it would have been different. I don't have any basis to know what the testimony was of those individuals. Thus, I didn't allege that. I know that my client has said that they would provide statements inconsistent with what Mr. Wagner and Mr. Hespin testified to, who were the other people besides the appellant there, in addition to these three people named. There's no clear indication in the reports as to what their testimony would be. So
there were no depositions that were available?
No, there was nothing for me as subsequent trial counsel to really glean what their testimony would have been. For what it's worth, I did try to track these people down to discuss that with them, and they did not return my calls or seem interested in speaking to me. So I will reserve the rest of my time.
I'm sure it wasn't personal.
No, I don't. When you're involved in a shooting, in my experience, you don't always want to talk to people afterwards.
So, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Melissa Vincent and I represent the Appalachia, the state of Nebraska. Wheeler has assigned four errors on appeal. I intend to address the sufficiency of the evidence and the ineffective assistance claim related to the 404 evidence. The remaining claims I will submit on the brief unless, of course, the court has questions.
Do you believe that just naming those three witnesses like that is sufficient?
Well, under State v. Blake, which I believe was decided by the Supreme Court in January of this year, they have said that it is enough to name the witness without elaborating further.
Contrary to some past cases where they required at least explaining what the testimony would be. Would you agree?
Certainly, and I also think it runs counter to this notion of, you know, the reason why we raise these claims to begin with. You know, as while you may not always be able to find deficient performance necessarily, we can reject them for lack of prejudice, but the only way that I can do that is if I know what that person would have testified to. So if all you have to do is say, well, you should have called this person,
right,
and they could have testified about something completely irrelevant, we could easily dispense with it.
Right.
Well, now we can't. So it's my understanding based on that case, and I believe there have been a couple of cases from this court, one published and one more recent that was unpublished, where the court said the same thing and said, well, under recent Supreme Court jurisprudence, it's enough to simply name the witness.
So basically, criminal defendants can just name people and potentially bring a post-conviction claim.
That is my understanding.
Thank you.
Sure. Wheeler's claim that the evidence is insufficient to support his conviction is predicated in part on a perceived inconsistency in the jury's verdicts. However, as the Supreme Court explained in State v. Briggs, inconsistent verdicts are permissible in criminal cases and do not provide grounds for reversal. And furthermore, I don't agree that the verdicts are inconsistent. And frankly, I don't think it's any coincidence that a jury returned a verdict that was consistent with the prosecutor's remarks during rebuttal. Self-defense is a legitimate defense to assault and use, but not possession. So it's entirely possible that the jury believed Wagner was the aggressor in the situation, that Wheeler acted in self-defense, but that fact did not excuse his possession. But in any event, the issue here isn't whether the jury's verdicts were consistent. Rather, it's whether the evidence was sufficient to support Wheeler's conviction. I submit that it was. Both Wagner and Hespin identified Wheeler as the person who shot Wagner. In addition, Wheeler was injured during the altercation, as evidenced by the blood found at the scene, which incidentally led to the street where Wagner's vehicle was parked and was consistent with Hespin's testimony that Wheeler dropped the gun in his lap. And of course, Wheeler's blood was found inside the barrel of the gun, which suggested that he had in fact handled it. Indeed, there was no evidence to suggest otherwise. As for Wheeler's claim that his counsel was ineffective for failing to object to evidence that he had been seen with the gun prior to the shooting, I disagree. This case is factually analogous to State v. Salvador Rodriguez, wherein the Supreme Court discussed the concept of continuing possession. Here, as in Rodriguez, the information alleged that Wheeler's possession occurred on or about a specific date. So the fact that he was seen with the same gun in the weeks leading up to that incident was relevant to prove that charge. In addition, the evidence was part of the factual setting of the crimes alleged. Wheeler told Hespin that if Wagner came looking for him, he was going to smoke him, meaning he was going to shoot him. And when Wagner came looking for him, he shot him with the very same gun that he had been seen with just a couple of weeks ago. So whether you construe possession as a continuing offense or treat his possession as inextricably intertwined with the offenses charged, it was not 404, and his counsel was not ineffective for failing to object to it. So I have nothing further. So if there are no questions, I would ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Vincent. And how much time does Mr. Norlinger have for rebuttal?
1 minute.
All right. Thank you.
The ineffective claims involve, as counsel for the appellee noted, a testimony of both Mr. Hespin and Mr. Wagner about Mr. Wheeler carrying a firearm prior to it. I would respectfully disagree. I know that inextricably interlinked or intertwined is a basis. However, the facts in this case are very specific about Mr. Wheeler's conduct on the 6th, firing a gun tied with that. And the appellant would disagree that a limiting instruction would be proper in this case and is not, appellant's trial counsel would be ineffective for
that. Would you agree that the Salvador Rodriguez case that Ms. Vincent was talking about is problematic for you? Maybe.
Yes. Rodriguez is. I'm familiar with it. However, the defense, the appellant believes that his counsel should have asked for a limiting instruction in this case. To the appellee's counsel's point about self-defense, I will note that there is no self-defense instruction in this case. So I question the validity of that statement and the state's closing argument on that, as the jury was not instructed on that issue and it was not an affirmative defense raised. And I'll submit it on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mullinger. Thank you very much, counsel. The matter is submitted.